on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and it is Monday, May 5th, 2025. And I hope you all had a very relaxing, restful, fun weekend with your families, with your friends, or whatever helped you unload from all of what is happening around us, because it can be pretty stressful sometimes. Trying to keep up with information, trying to understand what is noise, what is critical. And so here at Invest Talk, we hope that our program, our daily program, helps to sift through what is actionable and what you can ignore. And in order to do that, each day we bring you a mixture of educational items, recent news stories, recent market events, maybe lists of things you should be aware of, like what we have today. And through it all, you contribute, you drive this show through your finance and investment questions via voicemail, on our YouTube channel, or most importantly, by calling us live anytime throughout the show. Now, in just a bit, we'll tackle the market performance of the day and run down those show topics that I have for you. But let's tackle this caller question first.
Hi, calling today about McKesson Company, ticker MCK. I'm curious if you can shed some light on why this healthcare company is doing better than the other ones, even though there are supposed tariffs coming in. Curious if I should sell out of this. A bit worried since earnings is in about a week. Let me know your thoughts and what you would do with this company. Thank you. Bye.
McKesson Corporation, ticker MCK, is a healthcare services and information technology company. They specialize in pharmaceutical distribution, in medical surgical supply management, and all sorts of technical solutions for healthcare companies and healthcare providers. Now, it is a fairly large company, about $88 billion market cap. It's performed very well in the past year, up 33.68%. In the past year, up 16.49% in the past 3 months, up 24.05% year to date. And if you look back going the past 6 years or so, it's outperformed its industry every single year, and its years of underperformance relative to the S&P 500, very minimal, with the most being 3.7% underperformance in 2019, but under 1% underperformance in 2023 and 2024. And its revenue growth is pretty stable and also solid, 7.6% on an annualized basis. Its margins, small but consistent, between about 40 basis points to 1.2%. So really what you're getting here is a lot of growth and not a lot of margin expansion. Now, they're trading at about 19 times forward-looking earnings, which is the high over the past 5 years. But the reason why this company is performing well is a successful strategic acquisition. On one part, its contribution towards the distribution of GLP-1s, what has been a very growing market in the past year, 2 years, and, you know, really just a robust financial performance, as well as, like I said, that consistent revenue growth. They only have about $7 billion in debt, no short interest out there, or there is short interest out there, but not a lot of short interest, about 1.53%. And their dividend yield is small, but consistent, again, around 40 basis points, pretty much where it's been over the past 5 years. And they buy back shares. So they are as well floating that share price with their share repurchase program. It went down from 160 million shares in 2020 to about 125 million now, all the while their cash flow has been steady. So this is just a consistent, solid business. We like it. It is a little expensive. We own it for our clients. We're certainly not buying any more of it right now, but we are still holding on to it. And it's had robust performance to justify that. So that is McKesson Corporation, ticker MCK. Now, we've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, so here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this headline, Five Estate Planning Tips for 2025. Kiplinger is highlighting five key steps for effective estate planning in 2025, including creating a will, managing digital assets, and leveraging current tax exclusions. Also, we'll touch on how Ford pulled their guidance, warning that they may take a big hit from Trump's tariffs. Elsewhere on the tariff front, the president announced yesterday, announced a tariff of 100% on the film industry for foreign-produced movies. We'll dive into that, what it means. Is it feasible to do something like that? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on oil's price continuing to slump after OPEC Plus announced it would expand production going forward. We also have some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on Intuitive Surgical Inc., ticker ISRG, and another on how to decide to reinvest your cash into the market, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I hope to hear from some of you live over the next 40 minutes. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll tackle today's market activity and take more of your questions on Invest Talk's Anytime Listener Line.
Invest Talk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
And we're back. Let's keep things rolling with the market wrap-up for today. U.S. stocks were lower in trading on Monday, ending off a bit off of their worst levels. You know, they tried to make a, there was a concerted effort for a comeback throughout the day, but ended a bit below where they traded for most of the day. Dow down 24 basis points, S&P 500 down 64 basis points, NASDAQ down 74 basis points, Russell 2000 down 82. Underperformers included energy on the back of poor performance from oil, entertainment names from that tariff threat, telecoms, and industrial metals. Outperformers included apparel names, as well as some airlines, managed care, and building products. Dollar down 20 basis points on the day. Gold finished up 2.4% after losing just under 1% last week. And crude oil finished down 1.9%. Overall, it was a very quiet session. Volume was pretty muted. The VIX was back near the pre-liberation day levels. And going forward, honestly, pretty limited in terms of catalysts in the coming weeks, because some of what the market was looking to see from key earnings really hashed out in the past couple weeks. Interestingly enough, a little bit of a defensive rotation today following that 9-day winning streak. In fact, that's something that hasn't really happened since 2004. OPEC Plus, we already mentioned it. We might talk a little bit more about it at the end of the day, should we have time. Well, they had a decision where they are going to allow increased output and potentially plan for a little bit more going forward. So that's really what's been driving oil prices down, not just on the demand side, but now on the supply side. On the trade front, Trump suggested he would potentially lower tariffs on China at some point, but also mentioned that there was no real plan in the near future to speak to Chinese President Xi, again, at least for the near term. So not a lot of news on the trade front either. Interestingly enough, though, Japan, who the U.S. has been negotiating with, asked for a full exemption from reciprocal tariffs, so that was denied as well. Elsewhere on the macro front, looks like April ISM services above estimates, highest since February 24. Few new orders also accelerated to the highest level year to date. Prices index higher again, the highest level since January of 2023. And the employment index in contraction territory for the second straight month. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, Tuesday brings the trade balances for March. Wednesday brings the FOMC decision. Expectation is rates will stay steady and Powell is expected to continue to highlight the risk that Trump's tariffs pose to both the aspects of the Fed's dual mandate. Then rounding out the week on Thursday, because there's not really anything big on Friday, will be Q1 productivity and labor costs, initial claims, and the New York Fed inflation expectations. All right, let's get back to answering more of your questions. This one from the YouTube channel over there in the comment section. While you're over there checking out our videos, if you want to leave a question in the comment section, we get to those as soon as we possibly can. Or maybe you just want to say hi, we like that too. This question is about ticker XBB. It says, in your opinion, is a bond ETF such as XBB a good place to park money if you anticipate a market correction in the near term? Well, taking a look at XBB, what it does is it tracks a market cap valuated index that specifically invests in U.S. denominated corporate bonds with a credit rating of double B or its equivalent based on an average of three main things. And so taking a look at this, let's scroll down a little bit here. Its expense ratio is about 20 basis points, so I'd expect it to just be U.S. corporate bonds. About 80% of its exposure, this is again probably by revenue, is the United States. Taking a look at its long-term distribution yield, about 6.48%, so higher than you're going to get from money market funds or from short-term treasuries. So if you're looking for a little bit of yield while parking your cash in the short or medium term, this gets you some pretty solid returns from that respect. Coupon rate about 5.84% is where they currently are. The rated average life, or the effective duration, is 3.3 years. So it tends to be on the medium end of the spectrum. And so if you expect rates to go up in the near term, you expect rates to be higher, not the Fed necessarily pushing them higher, but the market saying, I don't know, United States government, you're taking on too much debt here, which is certainly a possibility. We do have a lot of debt. Well, then given that the duration is about 3.3, it's going to be more exposed to and more interest rate sensitive than something with a shorter duration. In fact, it has only medium duration bonds because the maturity of the bonds here at the minimum have to be about, looks like 18 months. For the past 3 months, it's up about 26 basis points. Year to date, it's about 1.76%. 1 year, it's up about 7%. You know, I think this is an interesting question because for a lot of people, they are scared right now. They have elevated cash positions. Hopefully, they're not all cash, but they have elevated cash positions. We, in fact, for our strategies, have elevated cash positions as well. But I think with a fund like this, although it is inexpensive, it invests in the US, I'm a little hesitant to park money here in the short to medium term, just because of the duration risk that you see with something that has a minimum of 18 months in terms of duration and an average duration of about 3.3. And so the risk here is, I already mentioned it, you could potentially have a situation where you are on the wrong side if rates in the market tend to lend higher, because the dynamics of bond pricing is such that as rates go up, current issued bonds prices go down because new issued bonds have higher rates. And so my suggestion would be, if you want to hold cash on the sidelines, probably want to reach for something with a shorter duration, say on the shorter end of the curve. You will get less yield here, but you will also likely have a little bit less duration risk, interest rate specific risk, and still staying in the investment grade bonds is probably a wise choice to make as well. That is XBB, the BondBlox BB rated USD high yield corporate bond ETF. In these trying times, being in high yield bonds, also known as junk bonds, and being in the longer duration side, probably not a good idea. Now, I know I mentioned it already yesterday and last week, but that's because I was very, very excited about it. And that is the completion of our webinar on custom indexing. And in this webinar, Justin and I went over an update on the current market. We went over the what custom and direct indexing is, the history of the financial products that were available from mutual funds to ETFs, and how in each iteration they become more and more tax efficient. And so over at KPP, we are launching our own custom indexing strategies. We have some pre-canned strategies that you can choose from. A global one, US small and mid cap, US core and high dividend yields, but they're called custom for a reason. We can do anything you want. We can impart your values. We can help you plan for your business transition or store some capital gains for uses down the road. If you're interested, head over to investtalk.com and check it out. We're moving into a break. It's still to come my main focus point and more answers to your questions here on InvestTalk.
. 2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is about a topic that I think too often people ignore, and that's maybe because of the implications of when this decision becomes necessary. But with that being said, let's talk about some estate planning tips for 2025. Now, as I mentioned, estate planning remains pretty widely neglected. 55% of Americans lack even the most basic of estate documents, and only 31% have a basic will, which is down from 46% just 4 years ago. And the reason why this is more urgent than, let's say, last year is because with the expiration of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act coming in 2026, really the end of this year, there is a potential, excuse my cat in the background, there is a potential that the lifetime gift limit, which was doubled in that bill, may expire as well. Now, every adult should have their will, financial power of attorney, and an advanced healthcare directive, also known as a living will. But again, most do not have those things. And the reason why you need them is because they ensure a distribution of your assets when you pass that is in line with your wants, with your desires. They also ensure that medical decisions will be handled properly while you are alive. Now, there's also something else that you may need that maybe wasn't as essential a decade ago, certainly wasn't as essential a decade ago, and that is a digital estate plan as well, with a digital executor who can manage your crypto accounts, who can manage your subscriptions, who can manage all of your digital lives with a place where they can seek your passwords that is safe and secure. And so one way we can prepare in terms of not just establishing these documents is to use, while you can, while you know what it is, that lifetime gift of up to $14 million in 2025 without incurring those federal taxes, a limit that, again, may fall as much as $7 million next year. And another reason why it is a good time to use those gifts is when there's higher market volatility, when asset prices go down, you can gift more assets at lower prices and use up less of that lifetime limit. Now, non-wealthy individuals may not need as robust estates and trusts, but they can still benefit pretty greatly from estate planning. It keeps your estate out of probate court. It stops states and courts from deciding how your estate will be allocated when you pass. Now, if you're interested and you don't really have complex needs, you can use free or low-cost online do-it-yourself tools to build that estate plan. But really, if you have a lot of complexity, you should be reaching out to financial advisors such as us, and we can help direct you towards our partnered estate planning tools or estate planning attorneys to help you out going forward. The number one risk, though, the number one risk by far, and it's evident for 45% of Americans who don't have any of these documents, is procrastination. It is the biggest risk you face, because the last thing you want in a trying time for your family emotionally is to have to deal with an estate without a plan. Now, let's keep things moving and play another caller question now.
I was just wondering, I took some profits and have been sitting on maybe 30, 35% of my portfolio in cash, and was just wondering, when do you think would be the best time to consider putting that back into the market. Should I be slowly doing that now? Should I wait till later in the summer? Just whatever advice you can give me on that, I would appreciate. Thank you.
So it's difficult to give you a direct answer to an important question. And that is because I don't know anything about you. I don't know how much of your portfolio is in cash. I don't know how old you are, which means how long your time horizon is. I don't know what type of account you have. And so I'll give general advice here. And so I have said over the past months and more recently that at KPP, our strategies currently have higher elevated cash levels because in times of market volatility, you benefit from being able to take advantage of those big downward movements that become more possible. And so, you know, let's assume that you have more than an elevated cash position. Let's say you have more than 50% of your portfolio in cash. Well, if you have a long time horizon, it makes the most sense for you to reinvest in the market while the market is dipping. The reason being that if you pull out on a chart of the US market over time, it in the long run moves upward, and there is a higher probability that it will move upward the longer your time horizon is, then you'll have a positive investment experience. And you know, I talked to a client about this today in that just because the market is down does not mean there is not a possibility of positive performance. If the market is down 5% in a year, you can certainly have positive performance. If the market is down 20% in a year, there oftentimes is nowhere to run and hide. But in general, all of this uncertainty, all of these market fluctuations, all the volatility doesn't mean there aren't any opportunities out there. It just narrows the opportunity set a bit, meaning that the rules by which you invest for companies with strong balance sheets, for companies with robust revenue growth, for companies with strong margins, just has to be more strict in this type of market environment. And so overall, I would say if you took some profits, which you should certainly do all the time, regardless of if the market is moving the way it has over the past month or so, the best time to start to reinvest is now. Not by fully investing all of your cash in once, but by dollar cost averaging or value cost averaging back into the market, so long as your time horizon is long enough to take advantage of the benefits of long-term investing. Very, very important question. Thanks for the call. Now we're moving into yet another break. Still to come, more answers to your questions. Hopefully some live calls at 888-99-CHART. John from California, hang on. You will be next.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to John from San Jose, who has a question about Booking Holdings. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, I was thinking if this is the right time to get in into this stock. It has had a very spectacular run in the last 2 weeks, in spite of uncertainty about the economy. So I was a bit puzzled. The stock has gone up very fast. And is this a good time? What's your take on this? By the way, I love your show. I appreciate all of what you do.
Well, thank you. You know, this is a good question. So Booking Holdings, it is a travel company. So they run Priceline, Booking.com, Kayak, and Open Table. So not just travel, but dining as well. And it has had a pretty strong past couple weeks on the back of earnings on April 29th, which showed pretty robust revenue growth, especially from their international segment, right? If we click on this right here, we can see that the earnings per share was 24.81 compared to a consensus of 17.37, a 42.9% surprise on the top line or on the bottom line number. And so that has propelled the company forward over the past couple weeks. The price up from about 4,400 to 5,185, I think. 5,191 is where it closed today. And so I think that there's a little bit of concern here, understandably, that although you see, again, the robust international travel really pushing those revenues forward, is what would it look like on a forward-looking basis if the economy continues to deteriorate? If things become more expensive in our everyday lives, which therefore makes it more difficult for us to travel. We did a story last week about how more and more people are not taking summer vacations, how more and more people are doing what they call staycations. And so, you know, on a forward-looking basis, I think there is a lot of risk here, especially with this recent run-up. Now, that being said, it's still trading below its five-year average, trading about 23.1 times forward-looking earnings compared to 25, but well above the low of the past 5 years. And so if you have economic deterioration, you may have a year like 2021, where it underperforms the market by 20%, or 2020, when it underperforms the market by 7.8%. And so for me, especially on this rip, I wouldn't be looking to buy here. We should get some more clarity, you know, in the next couple of weeks, in the next month, about what consumer spending looks like in the wake of tariffs, right? You have to remember that we were getting a lot of the data we got was March data, was Q1 data before the announcement of what this was going to look like. And so for now, I'd hold off. I'd keep it on my watch list. It's a solid company, obviously, when travel is robust. Not necessarily sure that's going to be the case moving forward. That is Booking Holdings, ticker BKNG. Let's drop in another fresh Invest Talk listener question now.
Hi, Invest Talk. I was calling in with a question on the company Intuitive Surgical Incorporated. The symbol is ISRG, and wanted to get your opinion if this would be a good stock to get into and what the outlook would be and what a good entry point would be too. So if you think it's a good one, thank you for your show.
Alrighty, so let's take a look at Intuitive Surgical Inc. That is ticker ISRG. It is a robotic assisted surgical solutions company. And so they operate through three segments: their services, which I imagine is ongoing subscriptions, their systems selling the initial products, and then instruments and access, or instruments and accessories. Now, it is a fairly large company, right? About $194 billion market cap. It's got pretty much no debt, $146 million in debt. Their cash flow has improved pretty sustainably, I would say, not too fast. Their profit margins had dipped in 2022 and 2023, but since recovered in 2024, right? You see their net margin hitting a peak in 2021, about 29.9 times. I'm sorry, in 2019 of 30.8 times. Dipping down to 21 in 2022, but growing again pretty robustly. The revenue growth, solid, 13.3% on an annualized basis, though a lot of that in the back half of this five-year sample. Now, one thing that is striking me is it's trading at 64.6 times forward-looking earnings, trading at 11.1 times price to book value, trading at 70 times cash flow. So certainly a little bit expensive, I would say, but still, you know, from a relative strength basis, it's performed pretty well. It's up 39.45% in the past 52 weeks, albeit down 10% in the past 3 months. And so what this company does with its Da Vinci surgical system, you know, my sister is actually a surgeon and she has used some of these robots and she loves these robots. But if healthcare costs, or rather healthcare revenues, start to fall, well, then companies like these aren't going to see the investments that they have seen from hospitals over the past 5 years, right? Its innovation has been great. You know, my sister loves that system. Its expansion has been great as well, but these potential challenges from tariffs, where the cost of producing these robots and repairing these robots becomes more expensive for them and more expensive for the hospitals, with macroeconomic factors, as I mentioned, give it potential risk to the downside, especially for a name that is this expensive. And then so, you know, with that being said, I think that for now, given this run-up, given how pricey it is, I would stay away from it for now, although it has performed pretty well over the past 3 years. A lot of risks out there for an expensive to produce and repair product. That is Intuitive Surgical Inc., ticker ISRG. Looks like we have another live call. Jacob from Santa Rosa asking about gold and listening on AM 1220.
I had a question about silver as it relates to gold and its recent run-up. I noticed recently that the gold to silver ratio has gone past 100, which from my understanding has only happened about three times in the past 100 years.
Okay. And so is your question related to, you know, why? I mean, let's dive into that. So we've seen over time, you know, over the past year or so, really year and a half or so, that there has been a divergence from this traditional relationship between gold and silver, where gold tends to climb and appreciate in price pretty quickly, and then silver tends to track that, you know, in a more stepwise way. And so over the past year or so, what you've seen is really a disconnection, a dislocation from this relationship. And I think that has to do with what they really are used for, right? Gold is a safe haven asset. It has been seen as one for some time at this point, right? The US government used to mark their, or really control for the price of the dollar relative to gold. A lot of countries used to do that for their currencies as well. And so gold tends to respond faster to inflation and monetary policy and fiscal policy as well. It also is far more, because of this, liquid in terms of its trading through ETFs. Their ETFs are more liquid because of the volume, and the physical gold is more liquid than physical silver as well. And so in uncertain times, like we have now, high levels of uncertainty, people tend to flock towards gold. Now, silver, on the other hand, doesn't really offer that kind of historical safe haven levels, or at the same levels. It has more of an industrial use. And so over time, over the past couple of years, what we've seen is that divergence is likely due towards silver being more of that industrial metal and, you know, having those industrial uses, such that when the economic outlook is weak, the price of it doesn't appreciate to the degree that gold does by its safe haven, precious metal nature. And so that's something we've seen and something we're likely, I would expect to see continuing moving forward. That is the relationship between silver and gold. A great question. Thanks for calling, Jacob. Now, it is earnings season. Feels like it's always earnings season at this point. And one interesting note was from Ford, who suspended its 2025 earnings guidance due to tariff uncertainty, saying that tariffs may cost it as much as $1.5 billion in adjusted earnings before interest and taxes this year. Its previous EBIT forecast was $7 to $8.5 billion, and it didn't factor in those tariffs. And so given that the potential for their input prices or the input materials to have a cost inflated due to importation costs, well, it makes sense for them that they would want to revisit that. Earnings per share for Ford came in about 14 cents, beating estimates by 2 cents, but net income fell by $471 million, which is indicative of something we've seen across the auto industry. And frankly, one of the reasons why we tend to stay away from automakers, because it is a difficult, costly, and sometimes brutal business. They and the industry as a whole saw the revenue fall for Ford. It was 5% year over year to $40.7 billion, still beating expectations. But I think the big story here is the thing that I mentioned at the top, which is tariffs could add $2.5 billion to costs this year, especially because so much of their supply chain runs through Mexico and runs through China. A lot of the manufacturing of these cars tends to hop back and forth across borders. Across the industry, Trump's 25% auto tariffs are estimated to add potentially $100+ billion in industry-wide costs this year. GM, another big automaker in the US, expected to see a $5 billion hit. Stellantis also withdrew their recent guidance as well. And so, you know, I think this is important to note, because oftentimes when we're thinking about this, you know, we do have specific auto tariffs. So it makes sense to understand the ramifications for that industry broadly. But just with our ISRG question, it's important to see how all of these things combine to affect the cost, not just to consumers, but to companies as well, therefore affect their stock price. And this trend of, should this continue moving forward, this trend of revisiting and pulling back earnings forecasts is likely to continue and be more prevalent for the rest of the year. Now, real quick, let's try and fit in another caller question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel. This one is SPYI versus, or rather SPYI and QQQI. And the question is, what do you think of income ETFs, SPYI and QQQI? SPYI is the NEO's S&P 500 high income ETF, and QQQI is the same thing, but for the NASDAQ 100. It's for the Qs. And both of these funds are aiming to boost income for investors. They're ETFs. They're both ETFs. By doing what we do with one of our strategies, Equity Income Plus, and that is writing covered calls. And so this approach is to hold underlying assets, right? That's the covered part. Write calls on them, bring in the premium income. And, you know, should the calls expire worthless, well, then you just keep the premium income. Should the price go higher than the level of the call, well, then your stock is going to be called away. Or there are various things you can do to close it out if that becomes close. And so the big point of this being, you can invest in the market, you limit some of the upside, but then on a recurring basis, you're also seeing premium income coming into the fund. And so SPYI, just as an example here, has a yield right now sitting about 12.92% is the long-term distribution yield for this fund. The current dividend yield is about 1.35%. So a lot of that income is contributing to the yield that you're seeing in this fund. It's about 68 basis points in terms of its management fee. So a little bit expensive, I would say, for a fund that is investing in US large cap securities, but they're making their money from that covered call approach. Now, NEOS's version of the same fund with the NASDAQ 100 is also 68 basis points with a little bit higher long-term distribution yield, about 15.17%, and a lower dividend yield of about 0.77%. And so, you know, I think that covered call strategies can be good strategies to implement if you are looking for income. But understand that, you know, you are still exposed to the underlying. And so when you're focused in the NASDAQ 100, you tend to be a little bit more concentrated. S&P 500, a little bit more broadly diversified. You know, that's why you're seeing year to date with some of this downward market movement, it's outperforming because of that premium income that it's receiving. So in times when the market's moving down, these tend to be pretty solid investments. Getting that income help you match those liabilities over time. So good ideas. We run a strategy ourselves that is SPYI and QQQI. Looks like we have a third live call. James from New York. Everyone's name starts with a J today. That's interesting. Well, James from New York, you have a question about Qualcomm. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
I own it, and I'm wondering if these levels are good for accumulation for maybe a 3 to 5 year or even longer than that type of holding in Qualcomm.
That is a great question. So QCOM is Qualcomm Incorporated. It is a semiconductor company. You know, full disclosure, we own it for clients in one of our strategies as well. And it's been beat pretty brutally over the past year, down 22.38% in the past year, down 9.23% year to date, down 20% in the past 3 months. Its revenue growth over the past 6 years, pretty solid, about 10% on an annualized basis. Its margins, very solid, upwards of 25% for the past couple of years, projected to be about 30% this year. And so as you'd expect with a lot of tech getting beaten down, certainly the semiconductor side, remember semiconductors tend to be a cyclical business, Qualcomm is hurting. Now for a 3 to 5 year time horizon, I think Qualcomm is a pretty solid investment because of how intertwined it is within the semiconductor space and how critical it is towards the US being competitive in the production and utilization of semiconductors, particularly when the largest amount of CapEx has been towards the artificial intelligence secular growth theme. And so if you can stomach the volatility, remember these tend to be very volatile, especially in times of economic uncertainty, I think that reaching for it at these levels is reasonable. Thanks for the call, James. Good to hear from you. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break. Let's see if we can get a fourth live call in. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call
InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin, how's it going? I just wanted to give you guys a call and thank you for all that you guys do. I'm a fellow financial advisor and longtime listener, and really love the show. So, question about Shopify. I know it's a growth stock, and I obviously understand the trend towards value. What is a good entry point? Do you guys own any Shopify in your portfolios, and how you guys feel about the stock long term? Thanks for everything. Look to hear your answer on the podcast.
Well, we don't currently own any Shopify. Shopify is a cloud-based e-commerce company. So they pretty much have a hand in a lot of small and large businesses in terms of the selling and retail and commerce side of the business. Now, one of the issues I would say with Shopify, and that's something we should get some guidance on when they release earnings on May 8th, is the investments that they've made in AI from their side that haven't really borne fruit in terms of efficiency or kicking down costs yet, mean that going forward, the margins that they've been able to garner are likely to be smaller. Right, we're already seeing 22.7% margin projected to fall to 17.5%. This is a warning they gave us as well. And this is one of my big problems with the business, right? Is margins are all over the place. And so even though you're seeing 42.2% growth, which may or may not justify at 16.9 times forward-looking earnings, you stand to see, again, this is according to them, and they should give us more clarity this week, likely smaller diminishing margins, at least in the short term, because they're spending a lot of money in order to grow their offering and service those businesses with their internally within their systems and the AI they're implementing in their systems. And so for me, given all that uncertainty around that, given the fact that they also are making money by processing orders, should consumer spending ability fall? Well, that's kind of a double-edged sword in terms of not just top-line revenue growth falling, but margins contracting as well. And so, you know, given that, I just think it's not justified in terms of its expensive nature. It's 60.9 times forward-looking earnings. It's down 11.2% year-to-date, down 22.1% in the past 3 months. So for now, I would stick away from Shopify. Certainly, my general advice is do not buy anything within the 2 weeks surrounding earnings anyway, but we should get more clarity this week. That is Shopify, ticker S-H-O-P. And you know, going back to Qualcomm, actually, one important note as well is we do have the sectoral tariffs coming on the horizon as well. So something to be certainly concerned about if you are thinking about going all in on Qualcomm. I would not advise that. So just wanted to point that out as well. Now, before we head off into the night, I guess, my brain already thinking it's Friday, I wanted to briefly talk about the newest tariff threat that the president has proposed, which is a 100% tariff on films made abroad, claiming other countries are drawing filmmakers away and Hollywood is dying fast. Now, industry leaders are warning that the move would be pretty devastating. A lot of movie production has moved outside of the United States for cost reasons, for various reasons. And so studios, but also cinemas that are already struggling coming out of the pandemic, could suffer as well. My first question is, how do you enforce this? How do you monitor and charge for this service of just producing a film in a location outside the United States? It would affect a lot of movies. Affect, Harry Potter, also, you know, those types of movies that are produced, movies that are produced outside of the country. And that's why you saw some reaction to the stock prices of Apple, to Netflix today, a lot of those studio names, because executives are understandably weary of what this could mean for their costs. My larger concern is on a broader level. Up until this time, there really hasn't been a tariff on services historically. Do we want to open the can of worms, considering that services is the largest part of our economy? Certainly an important thing to track, an important thing to see, an important thing to watch. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for listening or watching. I encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast, which is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and over there on YouTube as well. Remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics, calculate your investor risk number, build a full financial plan, build a custom index, optimize your 401k. No matter what you need, it all starts with a portfolio review over on investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.